It is the Doomsday Podcast. Matt Mosley, Ed Werder. We are stateside. Ed is in New Orleans. I'm in Dallas. And we're all kind of Zooming together. Honestly thought, Ed, it was going to be like way late, but you work quick after the game. And you are now kind of in the bowels of the Superdome outside kind of a high-end club there. Now, I understand, and I actually listened to it, you interviewed DeMarcus Lawrence, but before we talk about that, what was that scene like with Dan Quinn after the game? That seemed kind of cool, watching him greet the players.
Yeah, I mean, it was a unique situation, one that is unprecedented in Cowboys history. Because of the positive COVID test, Mike McCarthy obviously watched the game, we presume, from his Frisco hotel room. He spoke to the team in their meeting today via Zoom, as we're doing now in putting this podcast together. But it was the first time in the 62-year history, 942 regular season games, that the Cowboys played without their head coach. And so Dan Quinn was appointed to replace McCarthy. And I thought it was very appropriate that the defense wound up dominating the game with four interceptions of Taysom Hill and a pick six. Dallas now leads the entire NFL in interceptions returned for touchdowns. But, you know, after the game, you know, Dan Quinn celebrating his first victory as an NFL head coach since December 29th, 2019, so almost 2 years ago, and, you know, stood outside the locker room as the players were one by one coming in, very joyous. He was, you know, embracing a lot of them, bumping fists, hugging them, Micah Parsons being the last guy in. Certainly, you don't want to close the door before Micah Parsons comes in. But yeah, and I think you talk to the defensive players, and they were certainly motivated to accomplish this for the guy who normally just coaches their side of the ball. And it wasn't the most impressive victory, you know, they've had this season, in my opinion, and we can talk more about all of that. But once again, I think the Cowboys kind of have evolved into a no excuses team. I mean, they've embraced this challenge. They've overcome adversity in a lot of different forms, whether it was losing DeMarcus Lawrence, who I interviewed after, you know, his return tonight, for almost the entire season, whether it was going to Minnesota and winning on the road without Dak Prescott. And now, you know, going on the road, coming to the Superdome, a hard place to win. More teams have done it this year than ever since Sean Payton became the Saints coach. But add the Cowboys to that list. I think it's a list of four teams now have won in the Superdome, which has not happened in the Sean Payton era. But yeah, it was an interesting scene, and good for Dan Quinn. He was clearly excited about it. And he said, you know, I talked to him before the game. He came over and ran the stadium steps just like always. But before he left the team hotel, I got a few minutes with him on the phone to go over a few things. And one of the things he said was that it was important to him to honor, you know, what Mike McCarthy thinks this team's identity and playing style is. And he felt at the end of the game like they accomplished that in addition to winning.
Yeah, and I thought, honestly, there was a moment late in the first half when he wasn't calling a timeout. And I thought he was trying to honor Mike McCarthy during that time.
He did kick more field goals than McCarthy might have kicked.
I did say something on Twitter that on one of those field goals he did kick, that maybe Mike was screaming at his TV in the hotel room to go for it in that moment. All right, we got a lot more to come. Frito Friedman of Frito Nation Productions, please play the music, sir. It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Ed Werder is in New Orleans, and just moments after hearing Dan Quinn, and Ed, it was kind of funny to see Dan Quinn. You typically don't see a head coach. Do you recall ever seeing a head coach with his cap turned around backwards on the sideline?
Didn't we used to criticize Tony Romo as a starting quarterback for doing that? I mean, yeah, I mean, he was wearing a ball cap, but it looked nothing like Tom Landry's fedora from what I could tell. But my vantage point was on the eighth floor of the Superdome. We're so high up in the Superdome that you actually have to look down to see the rafters where the Super Bowl championship banner hangs from that great season that Drew Brees and Sean Payton had so many years ago. 4 years ago, as they continue to proceed without Brees as their quarterback these days.
Yeah, it's a tough situation, and it got tougher because of the splint that Taysom Hill had to put on his right middle finger. And quite honestly, you know, I thought sometimes I was like, why are they even asking him to do that? And much like I've seen at the collegiate level or even the high school level before, Ed, at some point you could tell Sean Payton just said, you know what, we're not going to win throwing against these guys. Let's just run this guy. And it worked for a while. I mean, that run in the third quarter, like halfway through the third quarter, where Taysom Hill, you know, I think that was Casey, I think, who tried to come up with a tackle, and he got nothing. I mean, Taysom Hill at that point was really giving the Cowboys a hard time. But when he started having to throw the ball, he was in big trouble. And I think at least the Cowboys tapped back into what had been their calling card under Mike McCarthy. If you can say one or two nice things about McCarthy, and we try to occasionally, one of them has been he you know, his teams get a lot of takeaways, and four interceptions from Taysom Hill tonight. Maybe, Ed, the Cowboys at least try to reclaim their identity a little bit in this game.
Well, you know, I think you got to put this into perspective. And I think the right framing of this is, while, you know, it's hard to come in the Superdome and we have a high opinion of what Sean Payton can do, you know, this franchise is not in a good place. They've obviously mortgaged their future for several years, you know, compiling, pushing their salary cap responsibilities forward. And now it's kind of catching up to them. And then tonight, you know, they're playing Taysom Hill at quarterback for the first time this year. He's their third different starting quarterback. He's actually played more snaps at tight end and running back than he had at quarterback. He'd only played 30 snaps at quarterback coming into the game tonight. They're without their two starting tackles. They're without, you know, Michael Thomas, who established himself one of the best receivers in the league. They're without Alvin Kamara, who's a top 10 running back. So this is a pretty decimated team. And the only I talked to the coaches before the game, and the only reason they were playing Taysom Hill was because they have no supporting talent for their quarterback. And in that situation, Trevor Siemian is not equipped to succeed. He's just a drop back passer. He's just a guy. He's a backup quarterback. And so this was a move to Taysom Hill and his athleticism and his versatility to try to have a quarterback who could create offense on his own. They weren't going to be able to, you know, engage some of their playmakers because their playmakers weren't in the game. And they've been absent too much of the season for the Saints to win games on a consistent basis. So it was a difficult deal for them. And you would expect under those circumstances that the Dallas defense would dominate the game. And eventually they did. My greater concerns, I think, are with, you know, the offense and what we've seen from them for the past month or so. The defense did ultimately dominate, but it didn't happen until, you know, Taysom Hill was the first, I think he's the first quarterback ever to rush for 100 yards against the Cowboys defense. So there's another historic note. But like you said, once they got ahead and he was forced to throw, everything turned in their favor at that point.
Yeah, I would venture to say he's one of the first quarterbacks to run for 100 yards and throw for four interceptions in a game.
It has happened before. Norris Weese did it with the Denver Broncos, I think, in 1976. So it's not a common term, what we're saying. And it doesn't happen with great quarterbacks in NFL history, that combination.
Yeah, I that's interesting that you had that. I somehow knew you would be sitting on that, especially with some of that Broncos lore that you have memorized. Sort of a walking Elias of Broncos history you are. Doomsday Podcast continues on. Reminder, we've got our grades with Glenn Stretch Smith coming up. And Ed, that's one thing I wanted to get into it with you. I mean, like, you and I need to have a discussion about the Cowboys quarterback. And I got to say, you know, Stretch has these feelings sometimes, and sometimes these hunches are pretty good, but he is just convinced that Dak is not right physically. You know, that was a really poor decision to throw that ball like across the middle. I know he got hit, but was still
lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just, it's one thing, you know, if you just make a poor throw or whatever, but when you start making like extremely poor decisions, you know, he had good moments. He made some good throws. I thought those throws to CeeDee Lamb, especially, there was one, where he was hitting them on those quick slants. I thought those were really nice, but this guy was, I was on some radio show, the Brent Musburger, you know, thing, VSIN this week. And they were like, what do you think of Dak's chances at MVP? And I was like, wait, have y'all been watching the last three or four games? So I just think, he's still not quite right. And I'm just wondering, as somebody that admires the way he plays and his approach, what did you make of what you saw from him in this game?
Well, I think we have to consider the fact that, you know, there have been a lot of moving parts on offense. You know, he had Amari Cooper tonight for the first time in 3 weeks, and yet Cooper was really significantly limited in terms of his role tonight and how many snaps he was on the field for. He played a big role because his catch early in the game, I think, ignited that drive where then CeeDee Lamb made the 33 yard, I guess it was a run, but that smoke screen play that set up the first touchdown, which was a perfectly placed fade to Michael Gallup, whose hands are as good as his feet in terms of, you know, controlling his body and making ridiculous catches. I really am not that concerned about Dak and how he's played. I think generally he's played pretty well when you consider, you know, again, they were without CeeDee Lamb for a game and a half. They've made changes on their offensive line where they haven't had Lael Collins. They haven't had, you know, Tyrone Smith. I think the biggest issue and the thing that concerns me the most is they've lost their balance. Like, they can't run the football. The thing that set them up for success early on and the thing that they thought was their identity was, and they talked about it even after they lost to Tampa, was, hey, you can take one thing away from us. You can make us one dimensional. You can make us run, or you can make us throw. You can pick, but we are going to succeed at an exceptionally high level in whatever phase, you know, you allow us to do. And it doesn't matter to us which one it is, pick. But now they can't run the ball. They can't run the ball when they want to. They can't run the ball on early downs. Until the Tony Pollard 58 yard touchdown run, they really hadn't even tried to get the ball outside in the running game. And they haven't. That's been a recurrent issue. You know, I've seen people, former quarterbacks who work as analysts, who watch tape, you know, saying why are the Cowboys no longer pulling their guards and their tackles and getting them on the move and attacking the perimeter in the running game? And they finally did on that play that was so so important to them winning this game. The Tony Pollard run probably stood out as the biggest play in the entire game to me. But I think the lack of the running game and, you know, Zeke Elliott not being effective for the longest period in his career. I mean, he's gone six straight games where he's really done nothing with the football in his hands. So to me, that's the bigger concern than Dak. But, I can certainly understand why people would criticize Dak. He's certainly not executing at the level he did earlier in the season. But I think there are explanations for that I understand. I don't know what the reasons are that they can't run the football anymore.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I think it brings into play, you know, one of the things that you'll hear from Stretch is he thinks maybe Kellen Moore is a little bit goes with what you were saying. It's kind of like he's not even trying it in a sense, like he, and maybe it has something to do with Zeke. To your point, Ed, I think I saw something that indicated Zeke has now had seven straight games where he hasn't had 70 or more yards rushing. I mean, if you think about the form, the Zeke we sort of got to know, I mean, he would rarely even have two straight games without something like that. And now it's like 25, 35, 45. And you had the report this week that maybe the Cowboys were even considering resting him in this game. And I, as I tweeted after the game, after watching him kind of limp along, I think it might have been a pretty good idea. And it almost seemed kind of like Jerry was a little defiant, like, no, we're going to give him a serious dose and get him out here. Well, they couldn't. They really couldn't. I mean, they weren't running him that much, and he's not effective. And then, of course, Pollard. What's funny is, Ed, too, by the way, they end up with 146 yards rushing because the Lamb thing was a lateral for 33 yards, and then Pollard had the 58-yard play. So, you know, if you're just looking at, oh, they had 146 yards, you're just like, well, they were competent in the run game. But those happened on two plays.
Right. I can just tell you that I don't think it's going to be easy to convince Ezekiel Elliott that, you know, while this knee injury is relatively minor, that, you know, if you take a week off, it'll get better and we'll all be better for it offensively, you know, making the stretch run and into the playoffs. And it's certainly not going to be easy to convince Jerry of that because, you know, he seems to have overpaid Elliott as the second highest paid running back in the league, even 2 years after the contract was signed. But I can tell you that in talking to some of the Saints coaches before the game, without equivocation, they said the Zeke Elliott we see on tape right now as we prepared for this game is not the same guy we saw earlier in the season when he was healthy. And they said, we'll tell you that we are scared to death of Tony Pollard. His quickness, his elusiveness, that's what worries us. We are not worried about how we'll be able to defend Ezekiel Elliott in the running game. It's Tony Pollard who scares us. And I think that's the truth. And it's hard for the Cowboys to admit that given Zeke's profile on the team, given his status in the league, given how much they're paying him. It's hard to justify. And I think it is hard to get a guy like who's as competitive as he is off the field.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's going to be, I think that's going to be very difficult to do. Ed, I didn't want to say, we have a sponsor, a new sponsor, and I want to direct people to go to powertothrive.net. Rich Cavendish has really become one of the country's great motivational speakers, Ed. And I was reading this book as I was traveling to Paris on a 9-hour flight where my neck was hurting. And honestly, it deals with, and some of this is based on 1 Timothy 1:7, Ed. I don't know if you've been in the word lately, but it has to do with, you know, and a lot of this, all the stuff we've lived through, the pandemic, not letting fear sort of control us. And so a lot of people, you know, again, we don't try to get too religious on here, but people that are into Bible studies and that kind of thing, it's a book that is extremely helpful. And if you'll go to powertothrive.net, you can sign up for a free book. Again, that's Rich Cavendish. Wow. This is Ed, you remember hearing guys like Zig Ziglar back in the day, and those positive messages that people like that would share, he's kind of cut out of the same cloth and kind of comes from that world. So we're appreciative that he's become a big fan of the Doomsday Podcast and has joined us. And so we wanted to send some people to him. And I really found the book to be helpful and really uplifting. And I think that's a good thing for a time like this. Okay, Ed,
I think if Mike McCarthy in quarantine winds up listening to the Doomsday Podcast and is demoralized by how much you downplay his significant contribution to the organization and his success, he might need some motivational lines to pick him up.
Yeah. I like, my favorite thing was after the game, and I think that's good. I think Power to Thrive would help him, but when people are like, have you talked to Mike? And when Dan Quinn was like, no, no, have him talk to Mike. I thought he'd come in and get him on the phone immediately or zoom in and let the team talk to him. And it's kind of like,
Dak said he had texted McCarthy after the game. And it's interesting that technically, I guess, McCarthy still gets credit for this win, even though he wasn't anywhere nearby. He was, you know, a state away, but he still technically gets credit for this victory. I guess that's what they've done with these other COVID situations where a head coach has missed a game. There have now been, interestingly enough, McCarthy is the fourth head coach to miss a game since the COVID protocols and the pandemic began last year. Interestingly, three of the four teams won without their head coaches. The only one that lost is the Chicago Bears earlier this year against the 49ers. And, you know, the Bears can't beat anybody, no matter whether they have their coach or they don't have their coach. Unless they bring George back, they're not going to probably win many more games. But I thought that was interesting that McCarthy technically gets credit for this victory.
Yeah, and I thought his game management was better than ever.
Well, you know, in fairness to him, and so people understand, he was available and did play a significant role, you know, in the lead up to the game. And he really wasn't cut off from interacting with the players and the coaching staff until they arrived at the dome. So I know he spoke via Zoom to the players in their final team meeting earlier this afternoon at the team hotel and emphasized, you know, taking the ball away on defense and protecting an offense and playing complementary football and so forth and so on. And ultimately, I think that's exactly what the Cowboys wound up doing. And I think we need to talk a little bit before we end this podcast and talk about what's ahead for this team. Just what an incredible year Micah Parsons is having. And especially now that Dan Quinn is free to use him in his emphasize the versatility that he brings to the defense rather than, you know, forcing him into a role as an edge rusher because they don't have DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, you know, should be back for the Washington game. So because what he's done is really achievements. He's on course for things like J.J. Watt have done and, you know, having his name added to lists of Derek Thomas and Reggie White and some of the great, you know, pass rushers who have come into the league. This guy's played at an extraordinary level. And then Trayvon Diggs with his ninth interception of the year. I mean, two really remarkable young players contributing in a huge way to the success of the team.
Okay. Well, let's shelve that for a second and then we'll come back and do that. Right now, we do need to hear our stretch plays. And you would think, after a win where the Cowboys improved to 8-4, the man might be in a good mood. That was not the case. Here is our visit with Glenn Stretch Smith. Stretch, a really strange outing. Cowboys encountered a team that was in a bad way. I got to say, Stretch, and I know there's some bizarre things that happened in this game. I will say, and we're going to start with the Cowboys on defense. And I wanted to get you because we'd already, you and I off air talked a minute about this. How crazy was that call where the Saints got called for a blindside block that I know that one, I think caught even Cowboys fans by surprise.
Well, I mean, I'll start by saying I've never seen anything like that. And it kind of reminds me of that hairdo that you got right now. You look like Rick Ocasek coming back out of Europe. But I've never seen anything like a guy who does his job. I'm talking about the tight end for New Orleans. They're in a scan protection, which means he's going to look front side and his head's going to take him all the way to the backside, where he sees the safety come off the edge, and he comes and does a great job of blocking him, picking him up. It's a physical block, no question about it. But it was, I think, a 12-yard completion. They call an illegal blindside block. I've seen a lot. I feel like I've seen a lot of things, you know, with my time in the NFL, my time coaching college football. I mean, I've seen a lot of things, and I'm not sure that one doesn't, that's not the ace of spades. Just trumps them all. I mean, it was a, not only was just a terrible call, it's a call that I've never even seen made for a guy who did his job. I think that took a huge amount of steam out of the New Orleans offense. They had gotten the Cowboys to go three and out to start the second half. And all of a sudden you go from being first and 10 to first and 21 from like the minus 14 yard line. It would just a bizarre call, a bad call. I'm sure that the league is going to have a lot of explaining to do. We got that out of the way. Here's the positive, Mosley, is I saw a defense that was flying around. Do I wish their scheme was a little bit cleaned up? Yes. You knew, anybody that knew that Taysom Hill was going to start this football game, and if they didn't think he was going to run quarterback power, quarterback counter, quarterback draw, that's the other thing that kind of blows me away. And it keeps me from really giving this defense an A grade. But I'm not going to give him an A grade. I mean, when he rushes for 100 yards and you allow him to do those kind of things, to me, I'm going to start by giving, you know, the defensive line, great to see Lawrence back out there. Great to see Watkins get the pick. I mean, I saw some good things from Dorrance Armstrong. I love that they were getting some pressure with some four-man pressures, which is what they needed to do. Defensive line, I gave them a B+. Linebackers, I thought you saw, again, Micah Parsons do some great things. Vander Esch did some decent things in coverage. I'm going to give that group a B+. Secondary, do I wish they'd clean up a few things? How many times are they going to get burned on the deep over, you know, a deep two? To me, that's something when you play man coverage, you've got to know that you've almost got to keep inside leverage on those situations so that you don't allow that guy to run that deep over like they gave the touchdown on. I don't like the giving up the sloppy touchdown there to Harris at the end of the game on the shallow cross. That kept them from getting an A. But overall, a really good, solid performance by defense who's played three games in 12 days, really got beat up a week ago by the Raiders, and went out and did what they should have done, which is shut down not a very accurate quarterback. And then when he hurt his middle finger, you knew he was not going to be able to get that football and let it go. It's your thumb and your middle finger that, you know, really drive the football. So when he was not able to do that, I thought they really, you know, tightened the screws down after they, you know, allowed him to rush for about 70 yards there in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Okay. They tightened the screws down and did a nice job.
Let me ask you, I thought Anthony Brown, you know, had a good bounce back game, and he had his moments. And of course he was the one that on that over you're talking about that got caught up in some of that trash, and it happens too often with this team where they just get completely lost on a play. But I thought the bounce back factor, he actually competed and I thought came back pretty strong in this game. But explain to our folks, if you would, like on those quarterback, on the draws, on the power, all that stuff he was doing, like, where are the adjustments? Like, what is going on? Is it just hat on hat? Guys just simply can't get to him, can't get off blocks. Why was Taysom Hill suddenly, you know, taking over the game? And like you said, it almost kind of looked like they were completely baffled by it. And I don't know how you can go into a game against Taysom Hill and not think there's going to be a large dose of that stuff.
Well, I mean, you're right. But here's kind of what I know about this side of it, Matt, is that, number one, it's hard to practice against that. Can you imagine Cooper Rush or Benny Buck DiNucci trying to run quarterback power or quarterback draw? I mean, not near as physical, not near as fast. I'm saying they probably knew. Here's the thing, though. When you number up the way you can number up, and when I'm talking, when I say that, I mean, obviously you have more blockers because the quarterback is keeping the football. So when you have those numbers, it makes it a very, you have to be very disciplined in your lane assignments, in where you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to get there. And I think it's a very difficult thing to practice at full speed. I do think that the Cowboys made an adjustment after that third quarter and said, hey, we're going to toughen our linebackers up. We're not going to play them 6 yards deep. We're going to play them in here 2, 3, 4 yards deep. You saw them get real tight in there. And I think anytime you can do that and they were able to, then obviously get a lead and then it takes that out of the game. But it is something that is a little worrisome to me that they didn't do a better job of reading and recognizing that, especially in that third quarter where he just, was able to run up and down the field and really control the time of possession for the Saints. They just weren't able to get any, weren't able to get it in the end zone.
Yeah, and I thought Micah Parsons, that was an enormous play early in the fourth quarter on the sack that took the Saints out of field goal range, and that really was a huge turning point. And then the big cat, almost reminds me it's just kind of wild to watch Diggs continue to bait those quarterbacks. I mean, think about that stretch. That quarterback who already, like you said, had the middle finger that was messed up, he thought he could drop that thing in over Diggs, and he had zero shot. Like, Diggs was baiting, and your buddy Aikman, you can just tell a guy like Aikman who knows how rare it is to see something like that, it's almost stunning to him to watch those types of instincts. And it was kind of like when that ball was thrown, you knew Diggs was going to go get it. I mean, that thing had no chance with him out there.
Well, what I like is he played a perfect technique. He knew he had over the top help, and he made it look like, you're using it bait. Yeah, I'll say that. But he made it look like, hey, that window was going to be there. And he knew exactly where to put his foot in the ground, open his hips, and drop right into that angle. So it really was. It was perfectly played by him. I'm going to tell you this. It was, I don't know if it's Al Harris that's kind of picked it up and is coaching him. So you want to give the credit to Nick Saban. I'm telling you, he's a savvy football player. He almost had another pick in the game. He does things that are really well. Now, he frustrates me at times, too, because he should have tackled Harris on that shallow when they got that 70-yard touchdown, and he tried to punch the football out instead of just going in there and making a tackle.
Yeah, and that's what happens is they were up so much, then they get a little greedy, and you're right, they get a little – that's almost kind of like pumping your stats. Let's go over the other side of the ball, and I know we got a one big grade coming here in a minute. But I did want to get your take on the quarterback play. I what's shocking after a game like that is even though Taysom Hill was so compromised, and in the end he certainly did not throw the ball very well, and we know a lot of why he was hurt. But Dak continues to make curious plays. The one throw, and I know he got hit, but he just hung that ball out there for the Saints at a really bad time. I mean, that almost allowed them an opportunity to get back in the game. And part of that might be Kellen's fault for not trying to maybe run the ball. But, sometimes Dak does not look right lately.
Yeah, I go back to his last throw in overtime against the Raiders, and he threw that whip route, and he missed. I believe it was might have been Noah Brown against the Raiders, but he's ginger, and you can tell his right foot, his right calf. I don't care what they say. I don't care what kind of smoke they're burning out of over there, what color it is. It's this, it's that. He is not healthy. I can tell you that. He's not healthy. Doesn't look healthy to me. You know I don't go over there. I don't listen to anything that really comes out of there. I try to watch with my eyes, and I try to give a completely just unbiased look with my eyes and give you an opinion. And I can tell you right now, I don't care what they say, he's not healthy. That's number one. Number two, he's starting to make some really poor decisions with the football. There's something to be said for a four-minute offense, a situation where you got to go put the game away. And here's the other problem I got, is I'm going to go to the offensive coordinator because we've kind of attached them to the hip. And early in the season, I talked about how good they kind of worked together. Right now, it is ugly. And that offensive coordinator, I mean, anytime he had the same look on his face, the exact same look that he had on his face that Anthony Brown had on his face last week after giving up four PIs. I mean, he lost. He is lost. And it almost feels and looks like Kellen Moore is trying to audition or justify the fact that he ought to be a head coach in the NFL. And I'm telling you, that is worrisome for me. That worries me that the quarterback's not healthy, and it worries me that the offensive coordinator feels like he's got to go out and audition to get a head coaching job instead of just putting the football game away. I mean, how long did it take him to finally run, toss, get the ball outside of all those stunts and all that stuff they were running inside? He got it out there early throwing. He threw the ball, but he threw it out to CD and caught him out there and was able to get the ball down there for their first touchdown. But, I mean, he wouldn't run, toss. And that, to me, that's maddening. And then when I see that look, I mean, that look in your face he looks like that little RCA dog kind of looking up at his mom like, I don't know what the hell to do right now. And that's worrisome. It's really worrisome to me. You asked me for a grade on Dak. I'm going to say, Dak, go get your ass to the tutor. I'm not giving you a grade this week because you know what? It'd be an F. Go get to the tutor. Go get yourself some tutoring.
Wow.
Go get you some time off. Go get healthy and come back. And I said, go to a tutor. I didn't say go to the offensive coordinator because I'm giving him an F. You got to come out a little better than that in those situations to be able to get yourself in position to win the football game. I mean, the whole end of the game and how they should have put that football game away bothered me. Offensive line-wise, we got an excuse, Matt. You know, they're missing both of their coaches. I didn't think they made very good adjustments. And you could tell both of their coaches were missing. Running back-wise, I thought they did okay. I gave the running backs a B. But to me, the receivers again, blocked well. I don't think they are very strong from a tight end perspective blocking the line of scrimmage. That's starting to show up week after week on film, and that bothers me a little bit. I gave that group a C. But right now, Matt, I'm really concerned. And again, I don't like style point wins, but I'm really concerned about the lack of what's going on with this offense and a quarterback who, to me, looks a little nicked up. I'm going to finish by saying this. I know the head coach, Mike McCarthy, they said he was in a hotel somewhere watching the game, and I'm sure he was right in the middle of it. He's getting an F. Get a damn fullback on this football team. Get a fullback on the roster, on the football team, that can go block ISO for you, that can go lead up and get on somebody. The fact that you don't have one on a roster concerns me. Mike McCarthy, laid up, drinking you some Theraflu F.
Wow. Wow. Even with the COVID and in the hotel room, unable to get a hold of room service, not able to fill. And he's going to be okay. He's going to be okay. But wow, an F. So I'll say this, the interim coach tonight, does the fact that he, you know, that all the emotion all the takeaways? Do you give him a winning grade?
I thought he did a fine job. I mean, I think he's put in a very compromising position because had the real head or somebody with the head coach experience been there when the Cowboys are throwing the football in a 4-minute offense instead of putting the football game away? Yeah, I think it's a compromising position, a tough position to be in. And certainly, I mean, Dan Quinn did a heck of a job with his, you know, with his adjustments defensively and what they were doing with Taysom Hill and then him having to fill in as a head coach. But get a fullback on the team, for crying out loud.
Okay. The fullback, it's a very interesting angle. You will not hear it anywhere else. Stretch, I appreciate it. I did want to say to you, Stretch, some of those holiday parties that we used to go to, like out at Randy Galloway's, one of the things that was always served and still is at Randy's, no matter what age he is, Miller Lite. Work parties, last minute shopping, get togethers. Stretch, it's a tradition unlike any other. Don't let the holiday season stress you out. Instead of getting wrapped up in the hoopla of the holidays, raise a Miller Lite and cheers to keeping things uncomplicated. And with a limited edition holiday wrapping paper packaging on select packs, giving the gift of Miller Lite has never been easier. Stretch, can you imagine, like think about all your WFAA, Joe Trahans of the world, a lot of folks that we know have had some tough stretches here they've been through. What if you sent them something with some of that wrapping paper, with some of that Miller Lite wrapping paper? Don't you think that would you know, excite people?
Nothing like a Miller Lite, nothing like having those fewer calories, especially this time of the season. Mosley, let me tell you, get a haircut or you're going to get arrested for mopery. Get yourself a damn haircut. You look like a mutt.
For more gift ideas for beer lovers with the Miller Lite shop at shop.com, MillerLite.com. Give your friends and family the gift of Miller Lite. Miller Lite, perfect gift to help celebrate the holidays. Now, here's how you do it. Go to MillerLite.com/doomsday to find delivery options or pick up Miller Lite pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories, 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. Good night to you, sir. And that has been Stretch Place. All right, Ed, F's a plenty there. And I hate it after you said those kind things about Mike McCarthy that an F was given to Mike McCarthy, who was back in his hotel room. I thought it was unfair, but it also some very harsh words for my hair, which has gotten a little out of control. And he called it mopery, whatever my hair is doing right now. So he called me a mope. But Ed is, by the way, for folks, right down there near the interview room. He did all his interviews, and now he's sort of underneath the stands at the Superdome. Ed, real quick, did the crowd sounded fairly loud on TV, but then Archer was trying to insinuate before the game that it looked like there were a bunch of empty seats. That would be extremely rare for a Saints crowd. Did you notice any sort of fall off because of how poorly the Saints have been playing?
No, in fact, you know, once we came down from the press box and were waiting outside the locker room for the game to end and to get the interview with DeMarcus Lawrence, the final 4 or 5 minutes were being played out on the field, and it was the crowd reacted in such a way that it almost suggested there was something of an even split. Like, you weren't sure when the crowd roared whether Dallas had scored a touchdown or Taysom Hill had turned the ball over or the Saints had done something to get themselves back in the game. So I think there was a significant number of Cowboys fans here. We've seen that now in recent weeks, that Cowboys fans are believing in this team and they're making some road trips to sort of support them. And I think that was evident again here tonight. But no, I thought it was a pretty full house.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that, but
I guess what you're saying, it was an inaccurate report, but we won't get into that. I I'll be in New Orleans soon, by the way, January 1st. I'll be spending New Year's Eve and New Year's Day in New Orleans, because it looks like the Baylor Bears will be returning to the Sugar Bowl. All right, Ed, let's get back to what you wanted to talk about, because I think it's very appropriate. Micah Parsons, I'm seeing some of these, the ESPN, some of the things they're coming up with. He now has 10 sacks on the season, to go along with like something insane amount of tackles. Is it 100 tackles and 10 sacks? Whatever it is,
he's on pace for 100 tackles.
That's it.
Sacks.
Yeah.
The last player to do that was Bruce Smith in 1993.
Yes.
And he's certainly gotten himself in the discussion. And some would argue he's a favorite for a defensive player of the year, which no rookie has won since Lawrence Taylor. And I can tell you that maybe a month or so ago, I reached out when Parsons was really kind of taking over games and said, hey, you know, who does this guy remind you? I'm not sure you've had a player like this. I mean, he's not really like DeMarcus Ware. Ware was really just a great edge rusher. You know, he couldn't cover. He didn't really play a factor in the run game like Parsons does. We see Parsons down the field covering a wide receiver on Jayron Kearse's interception. So he does a ridiculous number of things. And the name that somebody said to me, and this is somebody very, very prominent over there, a football person said to me, look, you can't attach this to me and I don't want to be heard saying this, but he reminds me of Lawrence Taylor. I mentioned J.J. Watt. Well, in the last five seasons, only J.J. Watt has had more pressures in a three-game span than what Micah Parsons has done the last 3 weeks. We know he's already broken DeMarcus Ware's Cowboys rookie sack record. He's two past that, and he's on pace now for 14 sacks. Well, the NFL rookie record for sacks occurred in 1999, Jayron Kearse, 14 and a half. Alden Smith had 14 in 2011. Dwight Freeney had 13 in 2002. Those are the people that he's within range of reaching here. I mean, really incredible when you consider that when they drafted him at 12, they traded back. They really wanted one of the two corners, Patrick Surtain, who went to Denver, or J.C. Horn, who went to Carolina, right in front of them. Then they trade back and they draft Micah Parsons, who was, they said, was the number one player on their board on defense. But they had to sit him down, Dan Quinn did, and explain to him, hey, you know, you're not really the guy we wanted, but don't let that affect you. We still think you're a great player. We did want these other guys because of position need, but we think you're going to be a huge success in our scheme. And credit to Dan Quinn for figuring it out, a way to maximize this young player's potential right from the start.
Yeah, I think you do have to credit him. And they have a funny relationship. And on TV, I guess he told somebody from Fox before the game that maybe it was Christina Pink or somebody, but they said that he was quoted saying something along the lines of, he's like a big brother and like, or a weird uncle. That's what he said about Dan Quinn. And Ed, I mean, from a deployment situation, like where they line him up, I would see him quite a bit standing up, like in the middle, you know, like almost over the center at times. Right. Obviously, he comes off the edge.
Yeah,
he'll come off the edge. Sometimes they play him off the ball linebacker. They mix it up so much. I mean, I remember even thinking about Parcells and other coaches we've known over the years, and you know, rookies, they kind of wanted to be able to work on one thing. And I think they found that he's such a catalytic type player, this is different. This is a different approach. It's kind of like we can kind of line him up wherever. So in a sense, it's just like having this unbelievable toy, and it does seem like Dan Quinn deserves a lot of credit. They have developed this kind of cool relationship, and I think it's been good for both of them. And he had a quote after the game, Ed, where he said something to the, I could look it up. I quoted him and tweeted it out, but it was basically like, you know, he was talking about, hey, struggled a little bit early, but he was like something about like great men stay at it and achieve greatness or something. Like it was really, he's an interesting guy, and he is not shy. You know, it's not like I'm going to show up here hat in hand. He's like ready for this. And
the two things that stood out to me about Micah Parsons after the game, the first thing was in his press conference, I asked him a question about how much he's exceeded his own rookie expectations. And he said he hasn't. And he said, you know, he talked to Quinn right away and told him, look, I don't want you to treat me like a rookie. I want you to tell me when I'm wrong. And when I'm doing something right, I want you to tell me that I'm doing it right. Like he wants honesty, and he wants the pressure of having to perform and be an important part of what they're doing. And then the other thing that stood out to me, we mentioned the interview I did outside the locker room with DeMarcus Lawrence. And DeMarcus Lawrence said, you know what? I didn't know until I played out there with him tonight. I didn't know how fast this guy really plays the game. And you just start thinking about, you know, how great he's been to this point. Well, now he's got DeMarcus Lawrence commanding some attention. Next week when they play Washington, we presume that Randy Gregory and maybe, you know, Neville Gallimore is going to be back. And so that's going to force teams to worry about some other players, because Randy Gregory is a very disruptive player. And we know that Tank Lawrence can get pressure on the quarterback. So I don't know who's going to be good enough to block all three of those guys. I think that's the best thing the Cowboys have going forward. This is a team that's supposed to win with offense, but right now I'd say the prospects for them being dominant on defense are better than they are for them controlling games on offense on a regular basis.
Yeah, we're not used to it. And I think you're right. And that's kind of what they need to lean into. And they need to take this time that they're about to have a little bit of a mini bye and try to get the offense going again. I mean, I think the good news is Gallup, you know, individually, they do some really nice things. And maybe now that they're all back on the field together and can start practicing together, they can kind of get it going. And Ed, this is an interesting stretch coming up with a lot of these NFC East games. They're going to face the Washington football team two times in three games. And quite honestly, the Eagles at one point were making a little bit of a move, but in fact, if they'd have lost this game, it would have started getting really scary. But at 8-4, the Washington football team is really the only team that is even remotely a threat. And so, I mean, you could really put the hammer down on this division. And if you do that with a division, then you kind of get yourself back into a nice conversation in the NFC. I think we've put away the talk of getting the number one seed and all that, but I think you just reestablish credibility headed toward the playoffs. If you can win these divisional games.
Yeah. And you know, if you look at the division, I mean, the Cowboys have a commanding lead. And once again, it seems inevitable that they're going to be the NFC East champs. They have five games remaining, and four of them are against NFC East teams. Dak Prescott's by far, even now, like if he plays like he's been playing, he's still the best quarterback, the most accomplished quarterback in a division. Is he better than Daniel Jones? Yeah. Is he better than Jalen Hurts? Sure. Is he better than Taylor Heineke? Yes, absolutely. You know, in fact, he's 21-6 against division opponents in his career. And so that's why I say, I think it's a mere formality again that the Cowboys are going to win this division, unless Dak Prescott gets hurt. And I do think that, like you suggested, they've got a chance to work this out on offense. And, you know, I mentioned all the things and moving parts. And, you know, I didn't mention that, but while they played, you know, games without Tyron Smith and without Leo Collins, and they played more recently without CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. And tonight they played without their head coach, who doesn't call the plays, but he's involved in the offense and the evolution of the offense and the approach on offense. And so none of this has been easy in that regard for the offense. And I think you're probably right that they get this mini bye now. They have 10 days before they play again, and maybe getting it worked out on the practice field and doing some self-scouting from a coaching point of view, they can get back on track on offense, because we know that they have the personnel to perform at a really high level consistently. I mean, I think they still are probably the number one ranked offense in football based on yardage, and their top three in scoring. So they are an elite group. And if the defense can keep doing what they're doing, and the Cowboys, the offense provides them leads, then I think they do become a pretty formidable team in the playoffs.
Yeah. And Ed, I just got a text from a source, and apparently the Cowboys are going to go ahead and give Mike McCarthy a couple of weeks just to get healthy and feel okay. Give him maybe a couple more games off.
COVID, you know.
We wish him the best. We wish him the best. Ed, by the way, I ate with one of our sponsors today, Jason Below, who came up with Goodness Steak Seasoning. And one of the things he was asking for, he said, can I get Ed's address? And I thought, oh, gosh, I have to protect Ed. I don't know, you know what. But Ed, what he wants to do is send you and Jill some seasoning. I'm even going to maybe send some up to Colorado, some of your extended family. But I think Goodness Steak Seasoning, Ed, I mean, chicken, steaks, vegetables. And now, like in places like McKinney, there's some place up there people love called Local Yokel, I think it's called. And it's like farm to table, like really high end, great stuff. And they've started selling this Goodness Steak Seasoning because they think this stuff takes stuff to the next level. So, and the good thing is, you know, I'm working on these Doomsday T-shirts that have our pictures on it, Ed, and people are kind of excited about those. So what I have offered is anybody that proves to me they get some Goodness Steak Seasoning, I will send them a free T-shirt to go along with their steak seasoning. So, Ed, I've had to take that out of your paycheck, sadly, to get those T-shirts made. I can't, Ed, you're cutting out on me. Hey, good stuff, Ed. Good stuff from Goodness Steak Seasoning. Let me mention, by the way, how to get a hold of them. Here's how you do it. You just go to bringthetasty.com. Again, that's bringthetasty.com. And that's a great story. It's a success story, and we're hoping to make them even more successful. Goodness Steak Seasoning. Ed, any closing thoughts from New Orleans? Did you get in town early enough yesterday to go to one of the fine eating establishments on Bourbon or somewhere in the city, or did you not have time for that?
Sadly, I did not. There are a lot of places that have closed and not reopened, some of my favorite establishments. And then I tried to go over to the Redfish Grill, and I got in. You know, the interesting thing is during this pandemic now, New Orleans is requiring you to show vaccination cards to go into restaurants and so forth. Anyway, I wandered around for an hour, failing to find anything that seemed suitable to my taste, and wound up back in my hotel. Had a couple of rum and cokes at the bar, and then ordered a room service chicken sandwich. But I mentioned the vaccination cards because of this. It was an odd thing that everywhere you go, you had to show a picture on your phone of your vaccination card to go in, whether it was a casino, whether it was a restaurant, whatever, the hotel. And then you come to the Superdome tonight, nobody's checking vaccination cards. 80,000 people here, nobody's wearing a mask.
Yeah, we're still working on this. It does seem kind of like weird measures, but Ed, it's going to be okay. Just make sure you get out of town before the Omicron shows up. We're worried it could be in our borders, but we will continue the fight, Ed, as we continue to do all the things we can do to help each other, our fellow man. And now the good news is, Ed, everybody who was unvaccinated for the Cowboys has now had COVID and should be good to go the rest of the season. Is that accurate?
According to Dr. Jerry, yes, that is accurate.
Jerry, as you know, is
one of the leading experts on medical science and this global pandemic that we're going through right now. So anything you hear from Jerry, I think you can generally trust it, especially if it's related to any kind of medical condition. I think without equivocation, you can believe that Jerry knows what he's talking about.
All right, Ed, have a nice little stroll tonight along Bourbon Street. We saw pictures of Jerry hanging out with Ric Flair earlier. Ed, do you know what Ric Flair says? Do you know what he's kind of famous for? And could you give us one of those to say goodnight tonight?
Do you know? I sadly do not. I used to, for a brief period of time when I was a young lad, I did like pro wrestling, but eventually I gravitated toward more adult entertainment and professional football.
Yeah, yeah. Well, adult entertainment, Ed, do you want to share any more?
Adult entertainment / pro football, not adult entertainment football, just so we're clear.
We'd like to hear more. I would do it, but it would wake up my household. But anyway, it'd break our speakers. Thanks to Ed Werder, fine work from New Orleans, another successful. Our numbers are through the roof lately, even after some of these losses. So who knows what a win will do? May go past the 50,000 download level, which is always a level I love hitting. And we appreciate Mark Frito Friedman for all the fine work that he's doing out at Frito Nation Productions in far north Dallas. For Ed Werder and Mark Frito Friedman, I am Matt Mosley. Good night.